Disc 9.
Chapter 96. Susan was wet and shivering, huddled on the Node 3 couch. Strathmore draped his suit coat over her shoulders. Hale's body lay a few yards away. The sirens blared. Like ice thawing on a frozen pond, Translator's hull let out a sharp crack. "I'm going down to kill power," Strathmore said, laying a reassuring hand on her shoulder. "I'll be right back." Susan stared absently after the commander as he dashed across the crypto floor. He was no longer the catatonic man she'd seen 10 minutes before. Commander Trevor Strathmore was back, logical, controlled, doing whatever was necessary to get the job done. The final words of Hale's suicide note ran through her mind like a train out of control. "Above all, I'm truly sorry about David Becker. Forgive me, I was blinded by ambition." Susan Fletcher's nightmare had just been confirmed. David was in danger, or worse. Maybe it was already too late. "I'm truly sorry about David Becker." She stared at the note. Hale hadn't even signed it. He'd just typed his name at the bottom. Greg Hale. He'd poured out his guts, pressed print, and then shot himself. Just like that. Hale had sworn he'd never go back to prison. He'd kept his vow. He'd chosen death instead.
"David,"
she sobbed.
"David."
At that moment, 10 feet below the crypto floor, Commander Strathmore stepped off the ladder onto the first landing. It had been a day of fiascos. What had started out as a patriotic mission had swerved wildly out of control. The commander had been forced to make impossible decisions, commit horrific acts, acts he'd never imagined himself capable of. It was a solution. It was the only damn solution. There was duty to think of, country and honor. Strathmore knew there was still time. He could shut down Translator. He could use the ring to save the country's most valuable data bank. Yes, he thought. There was still time. Strathmore looked out over the disaster around him. The overhead sprinklers were on. Translator was groaning. The sirens blared. The spinning lights looked like helicopters closing in through dense fog. With every step, all he could see was Greg Hale, the young cryptographer gazing up, his eyes pleading, and then the shot. Hale's death was for country, for honor. The NSA could not afford another scandal. Strathmore needed a scapegoat. Besides, Greg Hale was a disaster waiting to happen. Strathmore's thoughts were jarred free by the sound of his cellular. It was barely audible over the sirens and hissing fumes. He snatched it off his belt without breaking stride.
"Speak! Where's my passkey?"
a familiar voice demanded.
"Who is this?"
Strathmore yelled over the din.
"It's Numataka,"
the angry voice bellowed back.
"You promised me a passkey."
Strathmore kept moving.
"I want Digital Fortress," Numataka hissed. "There is no Digital Fortress," Strathmore shot back.
"What?"
"There is no unbreakable algorithm."
"Of course there is. I've seen it on the internet. My people have been trying to unlock it for days."
"It's an encrypted virus, you fool, and you're damn lucky you can't open it."
"But
the deal is off," Strathmore yelled. "I'm not North Dakota. There is no North Dakota. Forget I ever mentioned it."
He clamped the cellular shut, turned off the ringer, and rammed it back on his belt. There would be no more interruptions. 12,000 miles away, Tokugen Numataka stood stunned at his plate glass window. His umami cigar hung limply in his mouth. The deal of his lifetime had just disintegrated before his eyes. Strathmore kept descending. "The deal is off. Numatech Corp would never get the unbreakable algorithm, and the NSA would never get its back door." Strathmore's dream had been a long time in the planning. He'd chosen Numatech carefully. Numatech was wealthy, a likely winner of the passkey auction. No one would think twice if it ended up with the key. Conveniently, there was no company less likely to be suspected of consorting with the U.S. government. Tokugen Numataka was old world Japan. Death before dishonor. He hated Americans. He hated their food, he hated their customs, and most of all, he hated their grip on the world's software market. Strathmore's vision had been bold. A world encryption standard with a back door for the NSA. He'd longed to share his dream with Susan, to carry it out with her by his side. But he knew he could not. Even though Ensai Tankado's death would save thousands of lives in the future, Susan would never have agreed. She was a pacifist. I'm a pacifist too, thought Strathmore. I just don't have the luxury of acting like one. There had never been any doubt in the commander's mind who would kill Tankado. Tankado was in Spain, and Spain meant Hulahot. The 42-year-old Portuguese mercenary was one of the commander's favorite pros. He'd been working for the NSA for years. Born and raised in Lisbon, Hulahot had done work for the NSA all over Europe. Never once had his kills been traced back to Fort Meade. The only catch was that Hulahot was deaf. Telephone communication was impossible. Recently, Strathmore had arranged for Hulahot to receive the NSA's newest toy, the Monocle computer. Strathmore bought himself a sky pager and programmed it to the same frequency. From that moment on, his communication with Hulahot was not only instantaneous, but also entirely untraceable. The first message Strathmore had sent Hulahot left little room for misunderstanding. They had already discussed it. Kill Ensai Tankado. Obtain passkey. Strathmore never asked how Hulahot worked his magic, but somehow he had done it again. Ensai Tankado was dead, and the authorities were convinced it was a heart attack. A textbook kill. Except for one thing. Hulahot had misjudged the location. Apparently, Tankado dying in a public place was a necessary part of the illusion. But unexpectedly, the public had appeared too soon. Hulahot was forced into hiding before he could search the body for the passkey. When the dust settled, Tankado's body was in the hands of Seville's coroner. Strathmore was furious. Hulahot had blown a mission for the first time ever, and he'd picked an inauspicious time to do it. Getting Tankado's passkey was critical, but Strathmore knew that sending a deaf assassin into the Seville morgue was a suicide mission. He had pondered his other options. A second scheme began to materialize. Strathmore suddenly saw a chance to win on two fronts, a chance to realize two dreams instead of just one. At 6:30 that morning, he had called David Becker. Chapter 97. Fontaine burst into the conference room at a full sprint. Brinkerhoff and Midge were close at his heels.
"Look!"
Midge choked, motioning frantically to the window. Fontaine looked out the window at the strobes in the cryptodome. His eyes went wide. This was definitely not part of the plan. Brinkerhoff sputtered,
"It's a goddamn disco down there!"
Fontaine stared out, trying to make sense of it. In the few years Translator had been operational, it had never done this. "It's overheating," he thought. He wondered why the hell Strathmore hadn't shut it down. It took Fontaine only an instant to make up his mind. He snatched an interoffice phone off the conference table and punched the extension for crypto. The receiver began beeping as if the extension were out of order. Fontaine slammed down the receiver.
"Damn it!"
He immediately picked up again and dialed Strathmore's private cellular line. This time, the line began to ring. Six rings went by. Brinkerhoff and Midge watched as Fontaine paced the length of his phone cable like a tiger on a chain. After a full minute, Fontaine was crimson with rage. He slammed down the receiver again.
"Unbelievable!" he bellowed. "Crypto's about to blow and Strathmore won't answer his goddamn phone."
Chapter 98. Hulahot burst out of Cardinal Guerra's chambers into the blinding morning sun. He shielded his eyes and cursed. He was standing outside the cathedral in a small patio, bordered by a high stone wall, the west face of the Heralda Tower, and two wrought iron fences. The gate was open. Outside the gate was the square. It was empty. The walls of Santa Cruz were in the distance. There was no way Becca could have made it so far, so quickly. Hulahot turned and scanned the patio.
He's in here. He must be.
The patio, Jardín de los Naranjos, was famous in Seville for its 20 blossoming orange trees. The trees were renowned in Seville as the birthplace of English marmalade. An 18th-century English trader had purchased 3 dozen bushels of oranges from the Seville church and taken them back to London, only to find the fruit inedibly bitter. He tried to make jam from the rinds and ended up having to add pounds of sugar just to make it palatable. Orange marmalade had been born. Hulahot moved forward through the grove, gun leveled. The trees were old, and the foliage had moved high on their trunks. Their lowest branches were unreachable, and the thin bases provided no cover. Hulahot quickly saw the patio was empty. He looked straight up. The Heralda. The entrance to the Heralda's spiral staircase was cordoned off by a rope and a small wooden sign. The rope hung motionless. Hulahot's eyes climbed the 419-foot tower and immediately knew it was a ridiculous thought. There was no way Becker would have been that stupid. A single staircase wound straight up to a square stone cubicle. There were narrow slits in the wall for viewing, but there was no way out. David Becker climbed the last of the steep stairs and staggered, breathless, into a tiny stone cubicle. There were high walls all around him and narrow slits in the perimeter. No exit. Fate had done Becker no favors this morning. As he dashed from the cathedral into the open courtyard, his jacket had caught on the door. The fabric had stopped him mid-stride and swung him hard left before tearing. Becker was suddenly stumbling off balance into the blinding sun. When he'd looked up, he was heading straight for a staircase. He'd jumped over the rope and dashed up. By the time he realized where it led, it was too late. Now he stood in the confined cell and caught his breath. His side burned. Narrow slats of morning sun streamed through the openings in the wall. He looked out. The man in the wire-rimmed glasses was far below, his back to Becker, staring out at the plaza. Becker shifted his body in front of the crack for a better view.
"Cross the plaza," he willed him.
The shadow of the Heralda lay across the square like a giant felled sequoia. Hulahot stared the length of it. At the far end, 3 slits of light cut through the tower's viewing apertures and fell in crisp rectangles on the cobblestone below. One of those rectangles had just been blotted out by the shadow of a man. Without so much as a glance toward the top of the tower, Hulahot spun and dashed toward the Heralda stairs. Chapter 99. Fontaine pounded his fist into his hand. He paced the conference room and stared out at the spinning crypto lights.
"Abort, goddammit, abort!"
Midge appeared in the doorway, waving a fresh readout.
"Director, Strathmore can't abort."
"What?"
Brinkerhoff and Fontaine gasped in unison.
"He tried, sir." Midge held up the report. 4 times already. Translators locked in some sort of endless loop."
Fontaine spun and stared back out the window.
"Jesus Christ."
The conference room phone rang sharply. The director threw up his arms.
"It's got to be Strathmore. About goddamn time."
Brinkerhoff scooped up the phone.
"Director's office."
Fontaine held out his hand for the receiver. Brinkerhoff looked uneasy and turned to Midge.
"It's Jabba. He wants you."
The director swung his gaze over to Midge, who was already crossing the room. She activated the speakerphone.
"Go ahead, Jabba."
Jabba's metallic voice boomed into the room.
"Midge, I'm in the main databank. We're showing some strange stuff down here. I was wondering if..."
"Damn it, Jabba!"
Midge came unglued.
"That's what I've been trying to tell you."
"It could be nothing," Jabba hedged, "but..."
"Stop saying that. It's not nothing. Whatever's going on down there, take it seriously. Very seriously. My data isn't fried. Never has been. Never will."
She started to hang up, and then added, "Oh, and Jabba? Just so there aren't any surprises, Strathmore bypassed Gauntlet."